Thank you, Abraham. I wanted to ask about this emotional scale. I've been working with it for a while, and the anger and the rage just are so uncomfortable. So it's much more comfortable to stay around in depression than to go through
it. You know what you're telling us, and we're glad you're telling this to us, because it's important that we tell you what we're going to tell you, because you told us that. If depression seems like a better choice to you than rage or anger because it's so uncomfortable, it means, without exception, clearly, it means that you care more about how other people feel about how you feel than you care about how you feel. Because we know that depression feels so awful that you can hardly breathe, and that in rage and anger, at least you can get a breath. We know, because we can feel the visceral body and the lightening of it. In other words, we know that it physically feels better to be mad than to be depressed. We know that. But you're not getting your feedback, it sounds to us like, from the way you feel. You've trained yourself to get your feedback from those that are looking on. And it's not uncommon. A lot of you, your parents did it to you, and you did it to your kids, and your teachers are doing it. In other words, the man we talked to just now, his employer is doing it to him, saying, it's so important to me that you behave in a way that makes me feel good, and if you should behave in a way that makes me not feel good, then you will get negative repercussions. And those negative repercussions can go all the way from a dirty look to withholding something that you want to firing you or beating you up or killing you. In other words, you know, there are extreme consequences, it seems, in this physical world if you don't mind those people who are so insecure that they have to wield their power over you in order to control your conditions in order to make them feel better. In other words, those people that need you to do something different so that they can feel better, you want to say to them, you are deeply troubled and I am not your solution. In other words, I can't stand on my head in enough different ways to make you feel better. And even if I could, I know that tomorrow you're going to see one over there and one over there and one over there and one over there, so you're still going to be miserable and I'm going to be standing on my head. Mm-hmm. Haven't you found that? Haven't you stood on your head only to discover that you did everything they wanted you to do and they're still not satisfied with you? So you do another reformation and another and another and another and another, and they're still not happy with you? And finally you say, well, I think I'll just go someplace else, because clearly I cannot do enough to myself to please you. And we say, you cannot, do not even try it. We're being really dramatic here, but we want so much for you to reach the place where you show yourself that the thought of anger feels better than the thought of depression. Mm-hmm. And that's your assignment. And of course, that's why we gave you that little earlier on disclaimer where you have to give a rip not what no one thinks. And that's not easy to do when you've all of the days of your life been judging yourself by the way somebody else is feeling about you. It's not easy to let that go, but until you do, you're all in bondage. In other words, the only way you can be free is to be free of having to jump through all of their hoops. The only way that you'll ever be free is by knowing that you can close the gap and knowing that everybody else has their own gap to close and that you're not responsible for their gap. People talk about unconditional love as if they know what it is. While they're running around saying, these conditions make me feel bad. Unconditional love is being able to love no matter what the condition is, because you have the power to focus in a way that keeps you in vibrational alignment with who you are. Mm-hmm. Conditional love says, you need to do things the way that makes me feel better. I look there and I like that. That makes me feel good. But I look there and that makes me feel bad. So that needs to change and be more like that. So let's make laws and let's get enforcers, and or I'll leave you because you don't make me feel good. And we say, no problem. You'll just find another one just like it, because your vibration is what is bringing everything to you, you see.
I've heard you talk about the fact that our emotions are situational. In other words, in this arena of my life, perhaps it's easy to go to bliss, but then something comes up in another arena, and that's where I have the problem. That's
good way of saying it. They are situational. This situation and my attention to it is causing this emotion. It's about focus, isn't it? Because when I focus on something for as little as 17 seconds, I activate the vibration of it within me. And the longer I stay focused, the stronger that activation is. And once I stay focused for as little as 68 seconds, now law of attraction begins moving things that match it into my space.
So is it the same thing then when I'm dealing with anger? Can I move through anger that quickly?
Well, maybe yes and maybe no, but here's the thing we want you to consider. If you're in depression, and that's your vibrational point of attraction, things that come to you from that vibrational stance are much less pleasing than the things that come to you from the vibrational stance of anger. Depression, or that powerlessness, brings cancer, it brings injustice, it brings torture, it brings things that you would describe as more horrible. When you anger brings people flipping you off in traffic. It brings traffic accidents, maybe. It brings things that are less horrible. If you're frustrated, it brings bumping your knee on the door. It brings dumping your purse out when you didn't mean to. It brings spilling your coffee in the console in the car. And so, depending upon where you sort of settle in, your point of attraction, we would much rather that you be in rage in terms of what it's going to net you than be in depression in terms of what it's going to net you. But, of course, we don't want you to hang around in any of those places very long. We want you to get up here into this place of self-appreciation and love so that the universe can shower you with all of the things that it's been holding for you for so long.
Well, what I'm wondering, you said to someone earlier that perhaps they were at a higher level than they thought, because in fact a lot of things are going pretty well for me.
Yes.
I've been dealing with a health challenge that I'm really coming out on top now. Things are feeling good.
Yes.
I feel like I'm seeing the light of the end of the tunnel with
Yes.
that. And that's true with other parts of my life too. So maybe it isn't quite that I need to dip down into anger.
Well,
as much as
that's a very important point, and we're glad that you are having that realization, because if it's a subject where you're frustrated or even hopeful, we would never coach you into anger. That's
right.
Going the wrong way on the emotional scale. But you can feel it's not a bad idea to just keep a copy of that emotional scale somewhere close by and to stop and say, when something happens, where am I on it? And then just choose something three or four lines above it and set it as a target goal and try to induce some thought that you think would make you feel like that about the subject that you are currently focused upon. It is possible, you're right, it's possible to feel satisfied relative to money and powerless in relationship to a relationship. It's possible. But usually we don't see a person really, really here on one subject and really, really here on another. Usually what happens is, because the subjects that you focus upon the most frequently, and there are usually four or five of them, cause a sort of averaging of your vibration. In other words, the lower ones bring you down and the upper ones bring you up. But then something happens where someone pushes your button and you really realize that that's really where you are, and that's the time that you want to deliberately and diligently move yourself. We've been talking about this forking technique where you realize that every subject is two subjects, and on one end of the stick is what you want, and on the other end of the stick is the opposite of what you want. And now project that stick out there into your future experience as full manifestation and realize that in every moment you're marching, marching, marching toward one end of the stick or the other. And you can tell by the way you feel how you're going to feel when you get there. So if you're marching along and feeling rotten, you might want to stop and say, hey, I can keep going, or I could make an effort to fork in the other direction. And so what we see with many of you is that something will happen which will cause you to fork this way and this way and this way. For example, let's talk about our friend earlier. I know what my heart's desire is, but I'm not allowed to do it. And no one has the right to capture me and disallow me from doing something that I really want to do. And so several forks could be made in the wrong direction. And then if you remember, we offered a sort of rampage that if he had been feeling it and really resonating with what we were saying, we forked way over here with that rampage. And then he said, but But his butt didn't take him all the way back over there. Mm-hmm. In other words, as you fork more in the direction of what you want, of course you're going to have some buts and what-ifs, and it's not right. But mm-hmm. if you're making the general effort to keep leaning in the direction of where mm-hmm. source is calling you, what happens is you just start forking, and in the majority of the cases, on the majority of the subjects that are highlighted in your life, things will turn out the way you want them to over and over again. And each success nets you more and more success because you begin to gain confidence in not your worthiness, it's not in question, but you begin to gain confidence in your ability to fork, in your ability to focus, in your ability to activate a vibration deliberately. And as you begin to watch universal response, which is all around you all the time, constantly giving you feedback on how you're doing on your forking technique, mm-hmm. before you know it, well, you've got it handled.
I practice affirmative prayer. So what I've been doing is sort of integrating some of your processes with that. I think what your processes have helped me to do is to be a little bit more realistic about where I am in the moment. Whereas before, with the affirmative prayer, you try to just go right up to the...
Well, you're right. And let us tell you what we notice as we watch most people praying. There are usually only a couple of kinds of prayers, and they're on one end of the scale or the other. There's the prayer of appreciation, and then there's the, oh God, please help me, because I'm in deep doo-doo over something or other. And you're right. And if you're in appreciation, then that affirmation or prayer is very soothing. But mm-hmm. most people don't pray themselves up the scale, but you could. In fact, mm-hmm. that might be a very good game to play, because Source is always listening and will call you. So mm-hmm. let's say a prayer that might possibly be inspired from Source Energy, who sees you where you are and is calling you not from an illogical place where you are not, but from where you are. So give us an example and we will offer the prayer that Source might offer for you. Tell us what the situation is and where you are. In other words, pick that powerless place or something near it and we'll show you.
One of the powerless places is my walking. I've had trouble walking now for a year and a half. And it's much better, but I still have moments where I feel like I'm going to fall over, I don't have the balance, or there's a marble floor, and forget it, without the cane, I freeze up. And so I'm still, you know, in most situations, I don't even need the cane anymore. But...
Well,
it gets
scary. Is this a situation where you would offer a prayer?
Yes. Well, I've been working with another system called Emotional Freedom Technique, where you kind of go through a process of accepting where you are in the moment.
Good.
Even though these floors look so slippery and shiny, and my legs feel so wobbly, and it is all so scary. And then you do something like, I deeply and completely love and accept myself, and you just work yourself into...
It's a pretty big jump, though. That's a pretty big jump
yeah.
from, I think I'm going to fall down, to, I'm
yeah.
amazing.
It is.
Not to say that you can't, and mm-hmm. it's all right, because in some sense you could say, well, I know what I don't want, and this is what mm-hmm. I do want,
right.
and now I'm going to make mm-hmm. my way up. So
yeah.
now make your way up. Give
okay.
us the words.
Well,
that...
so I know that there have been moments recently where I've walked without any problem.
Here's the thing that we want you to focus on here.
Okay.
In other words, we want you to pick a subject, and then we want you to deliberately improve the way you feel as you focus on that subject. So just try to focus, pick a subject, and that was a good one to choose. And now just say words that increasingly improve the way you feel while you focus on it. And this thing that you were talking about, this system that you are mm-hmm. working with, is absolutely right mm-hmm. when it teaches you to accept where you are. Because mm-hmm. it's like Magellan. Magellan never says, where were you yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Magellan wants to know, where are you now, and mm-hmm. knows where you are now and mm-hmm. guides you to the new place. So mm-hmm. where are you now relative to this subject that you're working on? And the work is improving the emotion. The work is not making your body better.
Right.
The work is not figuring out how to do it. The work is not explaining how you got here. The work is just focusing upon this mm-hmm. situation and finding words or focus mm-hmm. or thoughts that make you feel better when you focus upon it. You're closing the emotional gap. Now, here's the thing that we want to point out to you, or we want you to be aware of. Do you accept that while you are in this process of this disability, that every time that you've been uncomfortable, in pain, out of balance, and even the things that led up to it, every time you've had any of that, you've been launching rockets that have caused who you really are to become even more stable, even more secure, even more healthy, even more vital, even more alive? In other words, do you accept that there is a vibrational aspect of you that exists because of what you've been living that you are aspiring to?
Yes.
And so get it into that perspective, and now make the effort to emotionally aspire to that, because you got to go to the beach before anything will change.
Well, what seems easiest in that regard is to remember situations where my body felt really vital.
Then do it.
When I lived in New York City, and which was a walking town.
You see, now we don't think that's a bad idea, except that what we notice, and we have encouraged that with people on many occasions also, but what we notice is that if I accept that I'm here, and I want to be here, and I'm remembering a time different from now, I'm remembering a time before, sometimes it enhances your sense of separation.
Right.
It's like, well, I was younger and I was more in balance and my life was going better then. And so sometimes making that effort to go back and remember something that was before is counterproductive to taking the bull by the horns, right? Because you see, we're not trying to get you to change your body. We're just trying to get you to, in this moment, change your emotion, the emotion in your belly right now. We liked your idea of the prayer. And so we're going to stand over here as Source Energy, who has received the benefit of all that you've been living and has become the vital and alive and healthy and balanced whole physical being that you have caused us to become. We're the vibrational essence of that. And we're going to stand here knowing where you are in your momentary insecurity and instability, and we're going to use terminology that you would use, but from our perspective, you get the sense of what we're doing. I am so lucky to have this cane that gives me the opportunity to feel more secure no matter where I am. And the cane for me is, I'm offering this prayer of appreciation for it because it is for me this temporary balancing tool that allows me to get out and be more of who I really am while I'm on the process of regaining my complete recovery. So it's a prayer of appreciation about the cane. And I'm appreciating that in this day and age that there are so many environments that have been specifically maintained to allow people like me to get around comfortably and easily. And this is really a good time to be. Most things are paved. Most curbs are low. It's really a wonderful time. If you're going to be disabled, this is a good time to be disabled. And I'm not even minding so much my temporary disablement. Again, more appreciation. I am so looking forward to being able to let this cane go all together. And I'm appreciating that on many surfaces, I've already done that. In fact, often I find myself walking around without my cane and not even missing it at all, not even really thinking about it. And it's only under extreme conditions that I reach for it, and then I'm grateful that it's available. But I'm really happy at the stability that's beginning to be so apparent to me. And it is clear to me that I am on the mend. I see no reason whatsoever that I should not achieve full recovery. And my prayer, when you pray, do you pray to, who do you pray to? Do you pray to Source, to God?
Yes, to Source. I align with Source.
And what words do you use? Do you address a name, or do you say dear somebody?
No.
So,
because to me that would be praying to a God outside of myself.
The only reason that we are putting it in that way is because that's what prayers usually imply.
Right.
And so that's why we're putting it into the framework that you are allowing yourself to hear the words that Source is offering. So now as you are feeling happy, you are feeling appreciation about your walking apparatus, you're feeling hopeful about things improving, mm-hmm. you're really getting closer so that you can hear what Source is really saying about mm-hmm. you. And Source is saying, you have achieved a magnificent physical body mm-hmm. because of what you've been living. And there is a stability in your future that is beyond anything that you've ever lived before, even in that time that you were remembering before, because you've launched so many more rockets of desires. There mm-hmm. is more stability in your future than you have ever lived in your past in terms of your physical countenance. And it's really going to be fun to watch that unfold in my experience. And for that, I am grateful. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for every step I take. I'm grateful for the knowledge that I hold. I feel appreciation in knowing that life is supposed to be good. I'm beginning to feel even more appreciation because I understand that I am the creator of my own reality. It's fun to watch my body respond to my thoughts. It's exhilarating to watch me have clear thoughts and my body perk up and me have thoughts of something I don't want and my body feel not good. I like being able to focus on things and feel clarity, and I like being able to focus on things and feel confusion, and I like being able to say it's the result of my focus, not the result of anything else. I like having this physical body that is so responsive to the thoughts of my mind, and I like having control of the thoughts of my mind. It's really a great deal of fun. I'm actually happy for having this experience, because if I hadn't had this experience, I would not maybe have had the need to focus in the clear way that I have, and I can see that it is serving me in so many wonderful ways. It's just part of the unfolding life experience that has caused me to be so much more. I feel exhilarated in knowing that which I've become as a result of all that I've been living, and I'm so looking forward as I take closer and closer steps toward that. I wouldn't trade any of this for anything. I love being this physical being and this physical body on the leading edge of thought, and I love being a co-creative partner with Source Energy, who is pulsing through me at all times during all days, knowing who I am. I love knowing that Source is knowing who I am. I love knowing that Source knows what the substance of the floor is. I love knowing that I'm being given impulses on all levels. I love knowing that I'm on the mend. I love knowing that there's nothing that I cannot be or do or have. I love where I am, you see. And close the gap. And it's just about, now we're really good at that, because it's easy for us to find the emotional thread, the emotional trail. It's easy for us to know what statements will take us just a little further. But if we didn't know, we would open any one of these books, we would turn to the emotional guidance scale, and we would say, oh, I think I feel about here. Oh, that looks like that would feel better. What thoughts feel like that? And then we would deliberately think thoughts that felt like that until we were secure in feeling like that. And before you know it, you can feel any way you choose to feel on any subject that you focus upon. Mm-hmm. People say, well, Abraham, aren't I deceiving myself? Shouldn't I face reality? Shouldn't I tell the truth? And we say, oh, you could if you want to, if the truth that you're focusing on is a truth that pleases you. But there are a whole lot of things that are true that we know you don't want to live. Mm-hmm. And there are a whole lot of things that are true that we know you do want to live. And the true truth is that you can be or do or have anything that you have the will to focus upon long enough that it dominates your vibration and allows you to become one with Source Energy, who will never join you in your disconnected thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's the reason that the guidance system works in the way that it does. If your inner being would bellyache with you, then it would just join you and you would feel contentment in your complaint. You'd mm-hmm. feel contentment in your being less than, but it will never, ever, ever, ever be. Your inner being will never join you. You have no choice if you want to feel good than to coach yourself up the emotional scale, subject after subject after subject. So if somebody says you don't look like you feel good, say, excuse me, I'm going to go focus and feel better. Mm-hmm. If you say to somebody, I don't feel very good about that, get something out and begin writing. Make a decision that it matters how you feel, mm-hmm. because nothing matters more mm-hmm. than how you feel. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And by the way, what I usually refer to God as divine intelligence. So I just say that divine intelligence that flows in and through and as me. But I might say love force or any number of things.
But we like, hey you.
But in the prayer, I noticed that you didn't include anything about focusing on the cells or the muscles or the nerves, or is that a good thing to do, to say, and I'm seeing these cells
makes you feel better? And sometimes we encourage that. If you are really strongly focused mm-hmm. on your physical apparatus, mm-hmm. if you've been going to a doctor that is mm-hmm. showing you tests and x-rays mm-hmm. And you have that very activated, mm-hmm. then focusing on it in a way that feels better could mm-hmm. be very beneficial to you. But mm-hmm. what we want you to realize is this is easier than you want to make it out to be. You tend to want to micromanage everything. And what we're trying to say to you in really clear terms, you did the work when you lived the crummy experience. You did the work when you exposed yourself to the contrast which caused you to launch the rocket of clarity. And then Source immediately became that essence of that clear rocket, and now is calling you toward it. And so if you will just reach for the thoughts that feel better, mm-hmm. and usually what we notice, it isn't true with everyone, but if you are deliberately trying to make your way up the emotional scale, the more general your thoughts are, the easier you move. The other day, Esther was doing the final editing on the Amazing Power recording. Jerry had read it, and Esther was doing the editing before they sent it to the publisher. It was a very time-consuming project. And she's in the last throes of it, but she is determined that she's going to finish it today. And so she has her headset on, and she is sitting in her comfortable environment, and she is listening and doing it. And Jerry, because he has sort of run out of productive things to do, productive in the sense that Esther means sitting in your chair and quietly doing your work. Mm. He is outside with the bins open under the monster bus and all of the big trays out, and he is moving everything around out there. And Esther has this thing where she can't remember where Jerry puts anything. She remembers where she puts everything, but if he moves it, then it's lost to her. And it's not so much that Esther can't remember where Jerry put it. Jerry can't remember where Jerry put it either. That's what Esther's got going on in her vibration. So Esther is listening to the recording and trying to ignore what's going on out there. And every time she hears a clutter or a bang, she is thinking, he is moving things and I'm not ever going to be able to find anything ever again. And this is an old vibration that's been stuck in her craw. She's never taken the time to clean it up. It's something that they kid about and softly argue about. It's about the only thing that they argue about. Where is it? It's their strongest point of frustration. Where did you put that thing that I need? And then they will say, this bus is only 45 feet long. It must be here somewhere. And then they look everywhere for it again. So this is the contrasting situation that Esther is living. So she gets out her computer and she writes, Jerry is moving my stuff around. But before she actually did that, we should tell you how the contrasting experience escalated before she actually began to write. So Esther continues to do her work, and Jerry is out there banging around all afternoon, and he comes back in later, and Esther moves to another project and goes to print something, and her printer cartridge is out of ink. No problem, she says. I will go to the basement of the bus and get my printer cartridge, for I know right where it is. So she opens the big door and pushes the button that makes the big tray come out, and she counts down to the box that she knows it is in and lifts the lid, and there is an entirely different contents in this box. Now, interesting, Jerry said to her as she went out of the door, it's on the bottom shelf under the window washing equipment, but Esther could not hear that. He told her right where it was, but when she opened the lid of the box where she wanted it to be and it wasn't there, it compounded the feeling that she'd been exaggerating all mm-hmm. afternoon, and Esther felt irrational rage. And once she found the cartridge, which was right where Jerry told her it was, she felt exaggerated embarrassment and guilt, which is not much better than the rage she was feeling before. In fact, a little bit worse. So then she began to write. And what she noticed as she began to work her way up the emotional scale is that as she took a general dance up the emotional scale, it was easy for her to do, but it uncovered other deeper things. In other words, it uncovered her discomfort about trying to do so much in such a small space. It uncovered her discomfort about having too many things to do in a confined space or in a confined period of time. In other words, there were layers and layers and layers and layers of discord that Esther would not have admitted to any of you that were even present within her if that experience had not exposed them and if she had not made her effort to move up the emotional scale. So what we're saying to you is, stay general and move up. And as you stay general and move up, you'll feel the snag. And so what Esther has discovered, she'll make a page for the situation that she thinks is the issue. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of moving up the emotional scale on that issue, she might make the beginning of three or four other pages. So what we are getting at is you just be as light as you can, understanding that if you're going too fast, something else will pop up. And if you're going too fast, something else will pop up. But you can just go back and deal with it and deal with it and deal with it, and before you know it, you've cleaned it all up. Then it's a rare thing. It's a rare thing that comes up again, but you got to be willing to clean it up. That's why we're saying you live life in the crack, and new cracks are going to keep exposing themselves to you, but in time, you begin to feel not only invincible, but you begin to enjoy the reason for it. In other words, isn't it nice to have a reason to clean up your vibration? Mm-hmm. It's like Jerry and Esther occasionally will break something, and Esther will say, oh good, something to buy. It's the same sort of thing. In other words, life gives you a new reason to clean up your vibration. And we got to tell you, cleaning up your vibration is the essence of a really good life, because being in motion, that's that thrill. Jerry and Esther took grandchildren to Disneyland months ago, and little Kevin, who is just becoming 5 this week, is riding the Space Mountain. And Esther is riding with him. They all were. And Esther is realizing that it was a very big ride for her, and it must be a very big ride for Kevin. And as they are walking off, Esther is looking at his face and wondering if he will ever come back to the Kevin that she once knew, because he doesn't quite look the same. It's as if the ride changed him somehow. And Esther said to Kevin, well, Kevin, how was that? And he said, I was trying to be brave. And Esther said to him, I just can't imagine that there would ever be anything that would really bother you. And he said, well, there was no scary monster in there. That was what was really bothering him. He didn't mind having the air sucked out of his lungs as long as there was no scary monster. The reason that we bring it up is because everyone has these things, and you have different things that you're sort of apprehensive about, and no one other than your source, who is within you and has walked every step with you and who is aware of everything that you've asked for, no one can guide you in the way that your source can. So all you have to do is make one simple statement and say it often enough that you really mean it. I care how I feel, and I'm willing to make effort to improve the way I feel in moments that are significant. And we would say any moment that we would call significant is a moment when you are feeling negative emotion. Mm-hmm. Anything that you would describe as negative emotion is reason to sit and deliberately move up the scale. And you might say, oh, this could be cumbersome. And we say, for 30 days, it will dominate your life. For 30 days, it will be cumbersome. And then you will begin to see an avalanche of the things that have been lined up outside your door avalanching into your experience. In other words, people who are watching you from the outside will stand in amazement. They will not be able to believe the manifestational, transformational experiences that you are living. And you can just smile, and they say, what did you do? And you just say, I decided to feel good and made sure I did.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so very much.
My name is Kevin, and I too am enjoying the process of being in the present and being brave.
What do you think Kevin meant I was trying to be brave. He meant I was trying not to be afraid. Being afraid doesn't feel good, so I tried not to be afraid. I was trying to feel better than the circumstances naturally evoked from me. Don't you think that's amazing? Mm-hmm. I knew I didn't feel good, and my parents and grandparents have taken me against my bodily will and strapped me in to something that is going at very high speeds through darkness. And I have no choice other than to try to be brave. That is the message. Right. In other words, in spite of what's happening, I do have the power to adjust my emotion, if only the slightest little bit. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And the fact that he was doing that to gain clarity in his own mind for the experience that was unfolding before his very eyes was reinforced and compounded by his caring to show you, the people he loves, his bravery and his strength, which then gives you strength.
But we are not so happy about that part of it, because Esther doesn't want Kevin to be brave for her. She wants Kevin to be brave because it feels better to be brave than afraid. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of what she tried to reflect back. She said, me too. Me too. I was doing that too.
So that brings me to the issue of bravery when it comes to making a conscious decision to focus on that which we want. We hear the word want a great deal, and if I had a nickel for every time I heard you say want, I would be able to buy out every government in the world to never have a war again. And this is a good thing.
And if you had a nickel every time you've said want, your vibrational escrow would be full of billions of dollars, and it is.
Mm-hmm. I feel very wealthy, and I thank you for that. I would like to propose the approach that I've been taking, which would be to substitute the word want with the word have. Because it is becoming more clear to me that by taking that approach for me and perhaps others in the room as well, and outside, of course, that by using the word have, you are immediately accelerating the process and diminishing the separation between the present now and that want source that we've been speaking of.
We agree. We agree with you. And when you think about it, so life causes you to want something that you don't have initially. Mm-hmm. And source immediately becomes that and has it and is it. Mm-hmm. And then says, come over here where we are, mm-hmm. where you have it. And so you might say that moving up the emotional scale might be lack, I don't have it, hope, I will hope to have it, belief, I will have it, knowing I have it. In other words, there certainly are increments in that, and we do not disagree with you that when you have it, you have it. In other words, when you feel that way. But we also notice that for some of you, and it's different for everyone, really, but for some of you, when you say, I have something that your manifestation doesn't play out that you have, then you feel like you're being deceptive, which takes you the wrong way down the scale. So
that's right.
If saying you have it, and that really, you know, we love what you're saying here, because we have made effort here today in projecting thoughts, and Esther has found magnificent words that help you to realize that there is this becoming that has already been achieved that you are now closing the gap of. In other words, we would love it if you all could know that everything that you want, you do have. It's there for you in vibrational escrow, just waiting for you to vibrationally catch up with it. And so you're not telling falsehoods. When you say, I have amassed a fortune, it's accurate. When you say, I am a genius creator capable of creating anything, that's absolutely true. You have all of that. That's who you are, you see. And there is nothing that we would like more than you knowing that and convincing yourself of it day after day, subject after subject. You're absolutely right. When you say, I have this thing, I have it, I am it, it is me, it is mine. Well, it is. And that's why the rich get richer. They have it. They have it. That's why those vital, healthy people who have managed to avoid the commercials that are teaching them about decline, it's much easier to maintain wellness than to achieve it from a place of not having it, you see. And so if you can vibrationally acknowledge that you have it and viscerally feel that you have it and therefore know that you are it, then law of attraction cannot argue with you. But to say words that are empty and hollow is meaningless. So we just ask you to say the words that give you the best. Jerry and Esther, if they had a nickel for every email or letter they've gotten from people who are trying to get Abraham to stop using the word want, we still wouldn't stop. Because it's a bridging word, and words don't mean diddly squat. The universe is not listening to your words and saying, oh, he still wants it, don't give him to it yet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's still in the wanting mode, not yet, not yet. Okay. Oh, he's still using that word want. No, 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 not yet. No, no, no. We'll try to teach him no. We'll make the wind sound like no, no. We'll make the dog bark like no, no, no. We'll try to get him to say no, I want, no, I know, I know. Oh, he's still not there. The universe does not care what you say. The universe is responding to your vibration. In other words, the universe cares how you feel. And if you feel secure, you are. If you feel vulnerable, you are. If you feel healthy, you are. If you feel fat, you are. If you feel intelligent, you are. If you feel focused, you are. If you feel safe, you are. If you feel not safe, you are. In other words, you are whatever it is you feel.
Excellent. Perfect. Thank you. Next one, though. Thank you. The path of saying to oneself, I want or I have, when one does that to such accuracy and such inner truth.
Can we interject something here just
always,
for a moment?
Absolutely.
Because this is really, 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 really important. Oh, never mind. No, it really is important.
So it's important.
It is so important. If you are making war on the word want, if you want to get rid of wanting, this is what's wrong with that. You will never, none of us will ever be in a place where life doesn't cause us to become just beyond where we are. So that there will always be something. In other words, that's the fun of physicality. And so that passionate reaching for is the yummy stuff of life,
right.
You see.
Got it. Got it.
So when I say I want from a place of knowing that everything I want comes, right. Oh, that's such healthy wanting.
Empowered.
If I want from a place of never getting anything and believing that I'm cursed and damned and that I'm not going to get it, not such healthy place to be, you see.
Excellent.
So we want you to make peace with the eternalness of your being. You're always going to be incomplete. Which means there's always going to be something more you're reaching for that, in terms of manifestation, you don't have yet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have it. You're going to have it. You don't have it.
Yes.
You want it. You don't have it. You want it. You don't have it. You want it.
Right.
You don't have it. You want it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get it. You don't have it. You want it. It's a sure thing. You want it.
Okay.
We're just trying to make want feel better to you. And those who try to get rid of wanting, those who try to no longer desire, oh, we've never known anyone who tries to buck the current of the universe more than those who try not to want. Mm-hmm. The entire universe is established to cause you to become more. You can't hold that back. And when you go with that flow, oh, it is so good.
Nice. One last touch, and I'll depart. Willingly and gladly with want and have in my mind. If we are wanting and having an experience so much so, with so much inner truth, can we in fact experience fully, firsthand, what it is to actually have finally that want to be in source without actually in the physical world having that thing for which we've wanted?
For example?
I have a desire to create a place that I would reside in, that would serve as an inspirational icon for all those who come within it or hear about it, to create tools in their shed from which they can then expand and grow. I want this very desperately, as you can tell by the change of the tone of my voice right now.
Your wanting just turned to lack. In other words, your wanting
turned... Thank you. Absolutely
right.
Your
wanting turned to
yearning. You're so right.
Your wanting turned to yearning.
My whole spine just lit up. Thank you for saying that.
And that's all right. And so don't condemn the word, because it's not the word that made the difference. It's the focus. In other words, so as you spoke there, you focused upon something you really want, but you were trying to see it from where you currently stand. In other words, you haven't figured out how or where or when or who. Mm-hmm. And so, and
the
those
details, right.
And those questions are making you uncomfortable. So
yes.
Now go back to your question. It was a beautifully worded question. Your question was, can I...
All right. Can I experience that which I want or feel I wish to have without actually having it in the physical world?
Well, here's the thing. The answer to that is no, for this reason. You cannot find vibrational alignment with something that you have launched into vibrational escrow without it manifesting. So if your question was, can I find it vibrationally and not live it physically, the answer to that is no, because the law says when you have a thought that you are not offering contradiction to, and it's something that is a part of the thought stream that you set forth even before you came forth into this physical body, and now you've finally come up to vibrational alignment about it, it is going to manifest. So if that's the way you meant the question, then the answer is no. You can't find it vibrationally and live it vibrationally and have it vibrationally and know it vibrationally without it manifesting. If the question was, can I find it in my mind even though I don't have it yet in the physical manifestation? The answer to that, of course, is yes. That's what we meant earlier when we said you got to go to the beach in your mind, even though there's somebody out there that has a baseball bat that seems to be keeping you from the manifestation of what you want. If you do go there in your mind, then law of attraction must bring you the means with which to receive it fully. It must be. It is law.
Excellent.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Good time for a segment of refreshment. We are complete. You know how it is you are chosen? It is the focusing of your desire from a place of expectation that is in close enough proximity that you become visible vibrationally. So if there is something that you really, really desperately want, we cannot see you. If there is something that you want from a place of close expectation, in other words, if you are on the verge of understanding, you appear in a very bright form. If you are far from being ready, then you are invisible. Sometimes you can push through. Your desire can be so strong, even though your resistance is too. So we see you. But when we call on you, we all have a miserable time together. You don't like it. No one likes it, you see? So just relax with an expectation that you will receive your answer, and maybe it will be received because you are sitting in the chair, and maybe your answer will be received by you because someone else is sitting in the chair, but when you relax, you will receive. So, Abraham, did I get that right? If I know the answer, you'll call on me. But if I don't know the answer, and I really, really want to know the answer, and I don't know the answer, then you won't call on me. That's pretty much it, yes.
You talk about how the beasts are powerful creators. And I understood that from a point of them being free, basically being free of any resistance.
Mostly they are. And you can domesticate them into resistance, and sometimes you do, but
right.
Mostly... they are resistance.
But here I'm mostly thinking of, you know, beast, wild beast.
Yes.
And I took that thought a little further and think, well, if indeed they are that free of resistance, then shouldn't that make them even more powerful creators than we are, since we are so full of resistance?
Yes, it does. But they have come with different intention than you have. In the same way that they are freer of resistance, they also focus less upon desires. And that's really the distinction. You have the potential to focus your thoughts in more deliberate creation than the beast does, which is the reason that you have greater resistance. It's like the baby, even the human baby is resistance-free for the most part, but this little baby doesn't focus deliberate creation like someone longer in their body either. It's the same sort of thing. So the perfect life would be to have the focused mind of the genius human and the absence of resistance of the wild beast.
So then the distincting factor is intensity of focus.
Focus without resistance will bring you whatever you're focused upon. And the intensity of it has to do with how much you care about it. And so we are really enjoying your train of thought here, because so it seems, could it be possible then that I could really, really, really want something in an absolute resistance-free state of being? And we say, it's possible, but you usually have to work your way into it, because the way you came to want it so much was because you honed it from the contrast. Here is the way we like to tell this story. If you were to go on a vacation and you have several different places you plan to stop along the way, you say, I'm going to go here and here and here, this city, this city, this city, and then eventually I'll come back home. And then you say, oh, wait, I'm already home. Why go? I have achieved the conclusion of my vacation. There's no point in taking the vacation. And we say, you didn't go on the vacation to get it done. You went on the vacation for the fun along the way. So when you realize that that's the way you felt coming into this physical life experience, you came for the vacation fun along the way, not to get it done. So then when you realize that you wanted the ability to evaluate because you wanted the ability to give birth to desires, because you wanted the ability and reason to line up with them, because you like the feeling of coming into alignment and feeling the manifestation. In other words, that's what it is all about always. Man sometimes seems to misunderstand and think that there is some ending place that you are wanting to achieve. And there is not. It is the experience of expansion from the framework of joy that is your reason for being. Your growth is not your goal. It's just the result of your intention for joy.
That clarifies it. Okay, thank
you. It's an inevitable consequence of life. So therefore, it does not need to be a goal. It is an inevitable consequence of life. But if you make joy your goal, now you're eternally joyful. Think about the delicious experience of a little bit of contrast, which gives birth to clarity, and then the fun of lining up with it, and then the thrill of manifestation, and then more contrast, which gives birth to more clarity and desire, and then lining up with it from your place of knowing that you can do it. And that is the way the beast lives. In other words, granted, his life experience does not cause him to want to be number one on Amazon. And in that way, the beast and Jerry are alike, because Jerry does not care about it either. But the beast does not have those kinds of intentions, but the beast is very close to the intentions that it does have, and has the knowing and the expectation. Maybe that's the word we're all looking for. That expectation is the way you bring desire and belief into one focused place. You expect it into being, you see.
No, okay. You actually clarified in took it somewhere else where I was not planning to go with my follow-up question, which was...
Not really. We just got there before the question.
That's it. If indeed they have the, at least from what I hear from you, a fairly strong creative power, how much of that power is actually used in optimizing the living environment? And how much would actually resent or be affected by our intrusion? If they have the power to create and improve the environment, and if we do intrude in them, or us, or anything, you know, let's say there's a cataclysmic event that that really affect the environment, how much of these wild beasts' creative power, power to summon from source as well, how does it compare to... No, hold on. I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought
there. Well, your question is magnificent because you are let us tell you all of the things we like about this train of thought.
Okay.
What your assumption is, and it's valid, is that the beasts of your planet who are living in their environments are having contrasting experiences which are causing them to ask also. So the beasts of your planet are a enormous stabilizing influence on the physical well-being of your planet, so much so that we could boldly say the areas that are predominantly inhabited by the beasts are healthier than the areas that are predominantly inhabited by the humans. Because the beast lives and breathes and concludes and desires, even though he's not writing books of protest about the environment, he is still having experiences that are making him desire, and as soon as his desire exudes from him, even in the slightest way, source answers it, and he lives that. And what the beast does, this is another very interesting thing, the migration of the beast, whether it is patterns that you think that they have established for a long time, or whether it is the new pattern that the species is discovering even right now, exists because the beast knows where to go to come into alignment with what his previous environment has caused him to ask for. So humans look for the missing beast who has been here for hundreds of years and pronounce him extinct when all he did was move happily to a place where there was not human interference with the well-being that he was seeking.
So they're active contributors to the beauty of this world then?
Huge, much more than humans. They're huge. They are energy balancers. That is their primary reason for being, even more than the food they provide. Because when you think about it, the food they provide is mostly to just keep each other going. So it would be illogical for it to be necessary for this little guy to exist so that that one could eat it, so that that one could eat it, so that that one could eat it, so that that one could eat it. In other words, why don't we just have not that many beasts, and then that many beasts don't need to keep eating each other? In other words, what's the point? Mm-hmm. And we say, the point is, they want to come because they love life, and they want to come because they love expressing in a physical way, and they want to come because they know they are huge contributors to the energy balance of your time-space reality.
So that greatly, as far as I'm concerned, greatly increase the value to this world.
They are beyond description in their value. Even before you got here, they were the first ones to breathe the atmosphere and call for what would be even better.
Now you make it sound like if they were completely gone, then we'd be in big trouble.
You would be, but that can never be. Because the population of all species is managed from non-physical, not from physical, or you would all have been gone a long time ago.
Amen to that.
When you think about it, it's only when someone's really disconnected that they start talking about death, usually, wanting out, wanting to move into the non-physical energy. It's from that lackful perspective that humans push against things like that.
In the concept of the thing with the resistance, you also have said many, many times, in fact, recently even more than often, emphasize the fact that this world is vibrational, that we are vibrational beings living in a vibrational world.
That's and the basis of what you are.
A few years back, I became quite fascinated with this concept, and it led me to study, to some extent, the science of mantras, which are vibrational tools. I mean, there's no more pure instrument or technology, vibrational technology, really. And one thing that has stayed with me all these years, and now it has taken a whole new meaning with your teaching, there's a seed mantra that is pronounced gum, as in chewing gum, gum. And the vibration, the essence of this mantra is freedom of all obstacles. Now, from an Abraham perspective, obstacles are caused by resistance.
That is the only reason for obstacle.
So my understanding of the power of this mantra, it's really an anti-resistance, the ultimate, in fact. It's the essence of non-resistance.
Well, let's talk about all mantras, because we would say that about all of them.
Okay.
For this reason. When you focus, now it's interesting that for most of you, it is a word that does not already have a meaning. So it does not have any negative attachment already associated with it. In other words, it's good that you didn't choose God as that word, or money, or dad. In other words, so you choose a word that somebody made up because it doesn't mean anything to anyone. No one has negative attachment to it. And then you say, focus on this word. Focus on it completely. Focus on it so completely that you remove any other thought of any other thing from your mind. And in doing so, your vibration must raise.
So now you're saying that no matter what the word, if it focuses your consciousness enough to stop resistance, to let you be in a place of non-resistance in your thought, then it will automatically improve.
We teach meditation as a method to raise vibration. And in meditation, we encourage you to have no thought, quiet your mind. Well, that's hard for most of you because you've trained your minds to be responsive to things. And so to just put it on pause and find nothing to think about, it's much easier to find gum. It's much easier to find something and focus on it than it is to find nothing, because you're trained to focus. So that's the power of these mantras. You focus on something that does not already have negative attachment. It's like your natural vibration is high, like on the surface of the water, and when you hold the cork under the water, that would be resistance. But when you let go of it, the cork naturally bobs back up to the surface. And that's what you are like. When you let go of whatever it is you're doing that is causing the resistance, you naturally bob back up. So we say to our friends, we teach you meditation because it's easier to teach you to have no thought than to have pure positive thought. We would rather see you in a state of appreciation, because in appreciation, there's no resistance either. But to ask you to appreciate someone who's been making you crazy is asking the impossible, where to ask you to say, gum, is easier.
So are you saying then that I just answered my own question. The belief that some mantras have specific effect is based on the belief only?
Well, yes.
Yes. I know you were going to say that.
But that's not a bad thing, because what that is saying is, I'm living a situation that has caused me to feel that I've got some resistance, and I can tell that who I really am is over here and who I'm being is over here. And so I'm choosing this thought and using it as a guide in order to move myself into a better vibration. And so we see that as very deliberate intent. And in other words, when you look into religions or many methodologies, you discover all kinds of symbols like that, where someone has crafted some thing. Sometimes it's an object, sometimes it's a thought, sometimes it's a sound, and they tell you what its benefit to you is, and when you focus with the expectation of that benefit, you close a vibrational gap. That's a good thing. Just don't get into wars with each other as you argue over who's got the right symbol. And that is the difference between the beast lion and the beast man. The beast lion ohms and meditates and roars and purrs. In other words, he finds his way and stretches. He finds his way to come into vibrational alignment. And he never, ever gives a thought to some other beast going about it in the wrong way. Man finds his method, benefits from it, looks around, and criticizes everybody else who doesn't do it his way.
So what I find myself doing is now, because of you in the last 3 years I spent in your teaching, is I find myself deliberately using that belief, conscious that possibly, now you clarified, you confirmed that, the power of this mantra come mostly from my belief. But I'm now making deliberate use and conscious use of that belief.
And that's where the word expectation comes in.
Right.
In other words, I expect that this focus will yield me these results, and therefore it does.
And that can be applied to everything, isn't it? Including what you're teaching.
Everything. What Esther provides here is no background that she is trying to make fit. In other words, we offer blocks of thought to her, and at an unconscious level, she finds words that match them. And they have been willing to do this for such a long time that her ability to find the word that precisely matches the vibration that we are offering is really there. Now, everyone can do this, but that's what's happening here. So, in essence, it's almost like building a language from the ground up, because there were no predeterminations that were forced into this. It was just a simple response to one question after another. And the basis of this is so rooted in the laws of the universe that there are no inconsistencies. So anywhere you jump into it and any part of it you hear will find some resonance with something that you're living because it's law-based. Words don't teach. It's life experience that teaches. But sometimes it's fun because you are mental beings. You, unlike the beasts, really like to focus things into being. And so when you begin contemplating with this array of life experiences that surrounds you, that gives you data and evidence of what you're focusing upon, it's just the best of all things, isn't it? Not a shred of evidence to the contrary anywhere in the universe of these powerful laws. And when you understand the law and you listen for your guidance, there's no place you cannot go. And when you achieve that expectation, life really gets fun. When you say, anything is possible, what is my desire? Anything is possible. In what way do I want to play today?
I had a taste of that space a few weeks back. It feels good. Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed.
Good afternoon, Abraham.
It is.
It's a pleasure to meet you all. Several years ago, over 20 years ago, I had this magnificent ability to heal with my hands. There were a number of times when someone would be in pain, and when I would apply my hands would get very warm, and the pain would go away.
So, are you aware of how you came about that? In other words, what happened that caused you to summon and allow?
I'm not aware of that, no. I am aware that I made a conscious decision when I was entering into business, and business was such that I had the opportunity to speak to hundreds and thousands of people, and with the spoken word I could inspire and I could motivate in the seminar business. I believe I made a conscious decision to set aside the ability that I had to heal with my hands so that I could focus on structuring a seminar business, and that eventually, at some point in the future, this ability would return. Then would it all come together at the same time? I'd be able to inspire, to motivate, to educate, and also to heal.
We agree with everything that you're saying here, and we think the time is now. And let us tell you how it all fits together. The reason we ask you the question we did is because nothing just happens to you. Nothing comes to you that you haven't asked for. And this is the most important part. There are many things that you're asking for that the potential of realizing has already come. In other words, the larger part of you is already living it. And so when you ask, it is given. but you're not letting it in. And so that's why we phrased the question in the way that we did. Are you aware of what the combination of desire and allowing was that was allowing that? In other words, you had desire or it wouldn't have been there, and you had expectation or it would not have been there. Now, as you moved further through life and you made a conscious decision that you would educate and motivate and uplift, as you say, these are all wonderful things. But the world doesn't need someone to teach them how to focus desires, because their contrasting environment is causing them to fill their vibrational escrow full of all kinds of things. But when you are doing that thing that you call motivating or inspiring or teaching, what you're really doing is soothing their disbelief into believing more. So an effective teacher is the very healer that you were talking about, because you're helping them to reduce their vibrational pain. You're helping them to come into alignment, you see. In other words, we think that having lived the experience where you actually knew that you had the ability to soothe the discomfort in another through the power of your focus, you have that same ability standing in an environment like this also, by using not your hands necessarily, but your knowing of their potential well-being. One experience that you lived in one phase of your life and this new experience that you're describing, they are not different. They are exactly the same.
Really?
The soothing of resistance is the path to healing, and the soothing of resistance is the path to understanding. In other words, everything that you will teach through your seminars, they must learn to release resistance, or they will not receive the benefit of your seminars either, you see. So we have said to so many healers, yes, you are a healer. Yes, you are a healer. But yes, even more, you are a teacher. And so we say to you, maybe a little bit in the other way around, yes, you have been a healer and are a healer, but yes, you are a teacher. And now we want to say to all of you, there is not a whit of difference between teacher and healer. It is the same thing. It is someone who has the ability to inspire a reduction of resistance.
I see. Wow. I got that one.
And sometimes you do it by pointing out your successes. Sometimes you do it by pointing out other successes.
Yes.
But always you do it by saying and by convincing that you can do it. Always you do it by loving them where they are and helping them to stop their self-condemnation of where they stand. In other words, people have to give up on this determination to be unhappy with themselves about where they stand. They have to make peace with where they are before they can move at all from that spot, you see. You're masterful with your words.
So are you. One other question. Is my best approach with leading with intention, with the intent to provide what my audience needs at that particular time and space?
Those are good words. We would modify them only slightly and say something like, my audience will summon from me what they want, and I will find the words to help them hear it.
Yes. I totally got that too.
Because you see, healing or teaching, same thing really, is not about you summoning the power and then giving it to them in such a powerful dose that they can't help but get it. Because they don't need you or Abraham. They don't need anyone for that. When they ask, it is given. So that stream of answer has always been there. What we are catalysts to help them open to the receiving of what they've all along been asking for.
I see.
And once you know that, then, and you do, the words come easily. So the words that you might use are, they're ready for me and I'm ready for them. And Source has always been ready for all of us. And so I'll be a conduit through which what they want will flow. And I'll find a way of delivering it that they will receive easily. and the way you make peace with yourself about that. And they will, or they won't, right now. And if not me, someone else.
Yeah.
Don't put pressure on yourself about it. Yeah. Or your sensation of progress is diminished.
I understand that.
Have fun with it.
Thank you.
Do it for the fun of it. Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you.